Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. Today's guest is Travis Jamison. He created AMZ Tracker. It's a search engine optimization tool for people who sell on Amazon. And he sold it. I've got the number here. I don't know if he's talked. Do you talk about it publicly?
I don't think so, but it's not a big deal, so it's fine.
How much was it?
Like 11.6 million.
Why like?
I'm not sure if it was 11.6 or 11.8.
How do you not know that? Like, just from I'm not confronting you on it. I'm curious. Why would you not know how much that is?
It's been a few years. It's been like 5 years. I split it with my co-founder. And I have a lot of other like income streams coming in. It's not like that was my only thing.
Even at the time?
Yeah. Yeah. It was crazy and dumb, but yeah.
And so you never got to take some time off after that and celebrate it or any of that?
I didn't. I could have. But I was a dumb and didn't. In fact, that started new companies after that.
You had 5.5 roughly million coming into your bank account. Was that a check, a single check?
Let's see. There was a big one. And then there was the rest of it was dripped out over 2 years or a year and a half or something like that.
Today, among other things, he is running Smash VC, which apparently shouldn't be called a venture capital firm because he's not trying to invest a little bit of money in a company that will eventually sell at unicorn status. In fact, you have kind of a love-hate affair with unicorns. I see them all over your website, but you're intentionally kind of making fun of them because you just want to invest in a company that's run by a founder, wants to take a little money off the table and wants to get a little bit of help from somebody who has some skin in the game, and you're comfortable with them paying out money over years as they earn it, right?
Yeah, I'm paying to become a partner.
All right, we're going to find out about both of those businesses and some of the side businesses and maybe some of the supplement businesses. Was it a couple of businesses that you did in supplements?
There's been three now.
Three. So we'll find out about all of it. Thanks to two phenomenal sponsors. The first, if you're hosting a website, go check out hostgator.com/Mixergy. The second, when you're hiring developers, go to toptal.com/Mixergy. Was there a moment like where you got to celebrate? I'm not sure if like part of the calmness that I'm getting from you is because I confronted you before the interview started. I checked you out. And like, is this like you going, dude, I don't know what I'm in for. Andrew's a bit of a jerk and I'm protecting myself. Or is it just life is calm for you?
The moment life is calm, all of that seems quite normal at this point. Like if you talked to me 5 years ago, I'd been way more stoked.
When you were at your most stoked, how did life change because of all this hard work you put in?
It didn't. When I sold, I went and bought 20 of my favorite t-shirts from Zara at the time. And that was about it. I mean, we even had like a bottle of champagne and type of thing, but like no major celebrations, no buying anything crazy.
Real estate?
I bought a house about a year and a half ago, but this was, you know, I sold it 5 years ago. So no.
Do you buy new underwear?
I had plenty of that. Yeah. Tommy John.
Yeah. Jason Calacanis said that one of the things that he did after he finally got comfortable was he got rid of all the old underwear and bought new Tommy John underwear. That was it.
Yeah.
And why are you doing this? What's all the hard work for?
It was probably maybe trying to like prove that I'm, I don't know, worth something to people who don't really care if I'm worth something or not. So it's a false belief there. That was part of it. And then a lot of it, you know, everybody says freedom, but it was a big deal to me. Like, and when I say freedom, not, it's more just to like live a normal life without having to worry about the day-to-day stuff. That's all it was.
Like what? What do you mean by day-to-day stuff you have to worry about?
Well, you know, I can go out to any normal restaurant now. I don't have to look at the price. Like I look at what I want to eat and that's cool. You know, I live in a nice house now, but it's nothing crazy. And, you know, I don't have to like worry about what that is. I want a car, I go get a car. But I'm not buying Lambos. I'm just buying a nice normal car.
Someone does your laundry for you?
We do have housekeepers. Yeah. But I do my own laundry. They iron it.
What was growing up like for you?
I grew up in a kind of like American poor family. We have food and a place to live and all this stuff. But, like money was a big stressor in my family. Like I felt. And, you know, I grew up in like a trailer and I felt self-conscious about that. And so that was one of the big motivations to like trying to accomplish things and like check, you know, solve that problem.
Did your family argue about money or argue about other things? But at the heart of it, it was money stress that led to those arguments?
Yeah, they argued about money and stuff like that. Like I have a fantastic family, you know, super loving, very supportive. But yeah, it was a stressor.
And so what did you do about it growing up?
Nothing. Yeah.
And still, you've got this hustler mentality. You even told our producer, I'm half entrepreneur, just half hustler. Did that express itself before college, before you worked at that movie theater?
Yeah, I've always kind of had hustles. But you know, even in college, I was like, find something to buy and sell on eBay.
What's the UGO card thing?
That's exactly it. So I was working at a movie theater, and a UGO movie came out, which I had no idea what that was. It's like a Pokemon type thing. And everybody that came through, they would get a free little pack of cards who would see the movie. And we have a really small cinema. And so we had all these extra cards that around we never used. And I just asked the manager, like, can I have a box of these? He's like, yeah, sure. We're just going to throw them away. So I go home, check them out on eBay, and they're worth something. And so I start, you know, selling these individual packs of cards on eBay. And it's going, I have no idea, maybe like 10 bucks or $8 or something like that for a pack. I have no clue. But that wasn't scaling very well. And so I started doing a little bit bigger. So I would start buying boxes from other people who didn't know what they had and reselling them. And then by the end, I was buying and selling entire like boxes and cases of these from people. And they would ship it to the person I'd already sold it from on eBay. But this hustle only lasted a few months, but you know, it made a couple grand.
It's typical of what you were doing at the time. The supplement business, did you get into it because of Tim Ferriss's book, or was it just happenstance?
I absolutely got into it because of that book. And when I read it, like I just happened to be really into supplements anyway. Like I just knew this stuff and read about it for fun ever since I was young. So it was a blueprint for what I know on how to create freedom.
And so you saw he's selling supplements, I could sell supplements, he's traveling, I'm going to travel, and you ended up in Thailand.
Yeah.
Working from there?
Yeah. After the first business was making enough for me, I quit my bartending job. Thailand was my first stop, and I ended up hanging out in this little island for probably like 6 months.
And the internet was strong enough for you to get work done?
No, but so it was the island of Koh Tao, if anybody's been there. And they had a island-wide Wi-Fi that you would like buy a little pass for.
Oh, wow.
It was terrible. And then you had, this is back before tethering on phones, you had a USB stick that had a SIM card in it, had that. And then the little hut I stayed at had its own Wi-Fi. And usually between all three of those, you could get one to kind of work enough.
And how would you sell your supplements?
SEO.
It was all you learning SEO on your own?
Yes. And I kind of had to because I hired SEO companies, and this is the normal outsourced trash that, you know, people should never use. Nothing worked. I couldn't afford PPC, especially because I was doing it myself and had no idea how it worked. And this is when SEO was, you know, a lot easier than it is now. Took off.
And so you were doing a little bit of it. You got to $3,000 a month. You get any higher than that?
Max, maybe four. I don't really remember, but something like that.
Okay. And then did you start buying? No, AdWords weren't working for you. SEO was the only thing that was working for you. Forums, did you do anything there? No, it was just that. And then at what point did you sell that company?
It was, maybe it's like 2011.
Okay.
I sold it for like $110,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was that exciting for you?
That was very, very exciting for me. More money than I ever thought I would have in my bank account.
What'd you do differently?
It let me make more long-term decisions. Like I was still scared of it kind of going away type of thing. You know, getting $100,000 in your bank, it lets me invest in things. And when I say invest, like not in markets, but invest in business in a certain way that doesn't have to have an immediate return because I don't have to buy inventory next month, that type of thing.
It's the type of stuff that you want to do at Smash VC, right? That you want to give people that kind of freedom, give them a couple hundred thousand dollars, allow them to not worry so much about money day to day and know that somebody's got their back.
Exactly. Because most founders, like 100% of their net worth is usually wrapped up in their startup. And that's scary.
Are we calling it Smash VC or am I just reading the URL? Smash.VC. That's what you call it, right?
Yeah.
I saw your repost of David Hanmeyer Hansen saying, maybe you shouldn't be calling it VC. You should take the VC out of the name. But it kind of makes sense, partially because you're saying Smash VC, right? You're smashing the venture capital infrastructure and coming up with your own. And also you're signaling to people, I'm investing. I'm not just... Yeah,
we get lots of people doing the normal startup pitch too. It's like they haven't read the site. It's like, oh, VC, I got to pitch them. And every single day those come through.
And all you want to see is numbers. You want to see that it's a real business, that it makes sense to you.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there are like people like, oh, we're raising $500,000 at this. I'm like, that is just not me.
Why'd you reach out to the people from Tropical MBA?
So when I was, I guess, learning to be an entrepreneur, like that was the main podcast that I listened to kind of grow with that.
What attracted you to them? They've got a big following. That's why I ask.
I feel like they've usually been kind of like no BS kind of guys. And they were also living specifically the type of life that I wanted to live at the time. You know, living in tropical paradises, you know, building businesses, a lot of freedom. It was great.
And so you wanted to get to know them. You saw that they were trying to hire for a position. What was the position?
Yeah, they did like apprenticeship stuff. And, you know, when I applied, like, I knew I wasn't a good fit. I already had a business making money, but it was like the only way I could think to get into them and say hi.
By the way, are you like clicking a pen or something? I'm hearing something.
Yes.
Are you? You are. I can't tell you how many entrepreneurs I talk to who do that, who click pens. And I usually tell them before the interview starts. It's because I know I do it. I do it with the stylus for the Apple Pencil. I can't freaking sit still. Do you have that same issue?
Yeah, but I'm legit ADD. So.
And do you take medicine for it?
Sometimes. When I take it, it helps, but I don't like the person I am as much on it.
What do you mean? How are you different when you take it?
Makes, I think, me and a lot of people less empathetic.
Less empathetic?
Yeah. So I'm not as warm when I take it.
Okay.
Like my ADD isn't extreme. Like I can still function. And luckily, I feel like with most people who have ADD, when they find something that they like that interests them, they can get absorbed into it. And it's when you're like in a situation, I don't know, another situation, you kind of like got to fiddle or just, you know, if I'm having dinner with somebody and there's a TV on, like I can't concentrate because I just keep getting distracted. But it works because with work and entrepreneurship and business and stuff, I can get absorbed in it. So I can sit and crank on my computer for hours on end because I'm not bored with it for some reason.
You know, Travis, I wonder if I have ADD. I think every time that it's come up, I've said, there's no way I could have ADD because I stay so focused on stuff that you won't be able to, like, you can come barging into this room and tell me there's a fire outside. In fact, not you could. There have been times I've done this interview with alarms going off because the fire alarms are going off. I hit mute and I quietly go on with the conversation. I pace it mentally. I know when it's going to go off again. I wait and then I ask my question. I talk and then I hit mute again in anticipation. It's happened a few times and I've said that's the reason that there's no way I could have ADD. I'm too focused. But I guess you're showing me that people who have ADD could stay super focused even if they need constant action. Do you feel it helps you to have ADD?
Well, I've thought about that and I have no idea. I do have a lot of friends who say that I can like out-concentrate people with work. So maybe that's a benefit there. You know, I don't know if I have any like special skills in entrepreneurship, but I do think I outwork a lot of people like earlier on in my career.
What do you mean? How many hours a day did you work?
All
the time. You wake up and immediately start working.
I did. Like I don't anymore.
That's what you did before.
Yeah.
So if you had a job, why did you apply to be an apprentice of Dan and Ian of Tropical MBA?
It was the best way I could think of to like get in their scope, like to get on their radar.
It was just, hey, if I apply to be an apprentice, then they have to talk to me. And if I get to talk to them and through the application process, I'll get to know them. And you did get to know them. You told them a little bit about your business. And what did they say?
They said, man, just you can't do this, but just come on out in Bali and hang out with us. And so I was already nomadic at the time. And so I told them I'd already bought a ticket to Bali. So I was going to be there in a couple of weeks anyway. I hadn't. That was a lie.
Uh-huh.
So I immediately bought the ticket and showed up a couple of weeks later on their porch, and which was hard to find, by the way, in Bali. And they had no idea who I was. They didn't remember any of this conversation. But they were really cool and became really good friends with them. And also met who is now like one of my best friends in the world, David Hickenberger. He owns Fat Cat Apps and Landing Cube. He was on that porch as well. He had no idea who I was. Sean Ogle, if you know him. Like this all this like old school crew is there.
Just hanging out with them.
Yeah.
And what did you get out of being there with them?
My entrepreneurial universe expanded. So like all I knew was this little bit of like what I'm hearing on podcasts. And there were like five podcasts at the time.
Uh-huh.
You know, like Pat Flynn's podcast, I mean, like Internet Business Money or something like that.
Okay.
Drop MBA. And so that was like the only thing I had. And when I met these guys, I got introduced to so many other different things that people are doing. They had just started their private forum, you know, Dynamite Circle. It was the first time like I was around others doing the same thing as me.
All right, let me take a moment, talk about my first sponsor, and then we'll get into how you ended up with AMZ Tracker. My first sponsor is HostGator. Let me ask you this. Is Travis someone who's invested in companies, someone who's been creating companies for years? If I gave you You have nothing. And I just give you a hosting package with HostGator. What's an idea that you would jump on and build a business for to start from scratch?
If you want to give me 10 seconds to look at my Notion, I can tell you.
Oh, you got something in your Notion?
Oh, I'm sure I've got plenty of business ideas in Notion.
Really? Yeah, I'd love for you to go through your Notion and tell me.
Actually, all right. So I thought of this one the other day when I was reading Dan Norris's latest book, This is the Answer. And he started WP Curve, which was unlimited WordPress small jobs, like $69 a month. I own an SEO agency. And there's a lot of these little tweaks that we need to make the clients' websites. That's a huge pain in the butt. But that type of WP Curve thing wouldn't work. It was unlimited SEO small jobs. Somebody take that, do it, and then I'll be your customer.
Got it.
Yeah, like small, not like link building or strategy, but just like, hey, we need to fix this on a client's site. You know how to do it and do it safely without messing it up.
What's a small job like that?
Oh, you know, like fixing some title tags or some like redirect issues or something
like
that.
Got it. So even you as someone who runs a search engine optimization agency, you don't want to do that. You'd want to just pass it to someone else. And a business owner like me definitely wouldn't want to do that. I would pass it on to someone else. You said, look, Dan Norris created this business model, or at least made it big. That's an opportunity for anyone to jump on and say, I'm going to take these small tasks, put them on a menu, on a website. Anyone who wants to do that can pay me monthly. I will do unlimited number of these small tasks one at a time so I don't go crazy. And then eventually you start to hire people. It seems like the Philippines is where people end up hiring to do this stuff, right? And you build up this agency, kind of copy him. That's great. Whether it's for search engine optimization or so many other services that are almost cookie cutter, repetitive, that businesses with money need. You set that up and you've got yourself a business. Take that idea or anything else over to hostgator.com/mixergy. When you do, they'll give you the lowest price possible. They'll set you up with an easy way to get up and running with a website. I recommend going with WordPress. If you love them, you could be with them for years. They'll scale with you. They've got so many more services at HostGator than you see listed on their website, and they will absolutely scale with you. But if for some reason a year from now or months from now you say, I don't like them, it's your website. You take it and you go somewhere else, unlike some of these new services where they control your site and screw you if you don't like them. HostGator.com/Mixergy. Great hosting company, inexpensive, get you up and running and scale with you. And if you use that URL, you'll be giving me credit for sending you over. All right. Where did you get the idea then to create a software company?
So this was several years down the road. I had started another e-commerce company, again in supplements, because it's what I knew. And we were selling on Amazon. And Amazon is just another search engine, just like Google. So I was trying to rank for the keywords, my target keywords. But I had no rank tracker. Like, you know, for Google, you have a rank tracker to see where you rank. For Amazon, I was manually searching these keywords every day and like writing down my position. Really dumb. So I had worked with a guy a little bit. He was building a Google rank tracker and I had, you know, just giving him feedback. I didn't know any of it. And so I had this idea. I reached out to him like, hey, we should create this. And he was an amazing individual. And so we became partners and we started building it out. And so like the rank tracking for Amazon was like the very first feature and it just took off.
And how long did it take you to get that, or how long did it take him to get it up and running?
Oh man, this guy is so fast. Probably a couple of months knowing him.
The two of you just met in a
forum. He's one of those amazing developers who, you know, you tell him something, you come back the next day, it's live. Like, how did you do this? This is huge.
And what was it capable of doing, the very first version of AMZ Tracker?
The very first version was just tracking where your product ranked for certain keywords in Amazon.
And it would search it for me and then tell me where it was today and then do the same search again tomorrow and the same search after that and so on. But it wouldn't have a history of these search terms in Amazon, right?
Not a past history. Yeah. Just once you started tracking it, it would do it.
That's all it had. And your plan was to sell it on a monthly basis or to use it for yourself?
Both. So now I really wanted it for myself, but you know, I figured other people had this problem too.
Okay. So you started to charge how much?
Probably like $29 a month or something like that, something small. And I remember I was out to dinner one time and this was super early and I was talking to a friend of mine and who's in the software game. And I was like, yeah, you know, it's always going to be like a side gig. You know, these others, my SEO company, this e-commerce, this is where it's really at. You know, this, it's like month two and we're like $500 a month MRR. And he's like, wait a minute, man. Like that's not too bad to be month two. Like nobody knows about your product. You might be onto something. I was like, nah.
Why did you think that wasn't enough? Because of the world that you were coming from?
Yes.
Because in your world, if you're selling new supplements, how much could you make?
So at its peak with that business, it was about $30,000 a month. At the time, it was probably like $15,000 a month of that.
Got it. So who needs another $500? It just doesn't seem like it's significant enough. But yeah. With software, it's different because
it scales. You know, it doesn't. You don't necessarily need a lot more effort and time to get exponentially more customers. I was very much not in touch with the software game, not the community, not the startup community in the least bit. Like, I didn't know about all this stuff. Wish I had.
You told our producer the way you got customers. Oh, look at this. I see the first version of the site. $10 a month to track 20 keywords. Mm. You started really cheap. You told our producer, I went into forums and I started to tell people about it. How effective was that?
Oh, it was pretty effective for getting the ball rolling. A lot of these forums I already had, you know, a reputation in, stuff like that, which helped. So when I said something, people listened. And then the other forums were mostly like Amazon seller groups on like Facebook and whatnot. Mm-hmm. You just had to be helpful. Like, I wasn't sitting there spamming our thing all day, but people would say something like, hey, we solved this problem. Here you go. And then, you know, give good information five other times before saying something else.
I feel like that would be where a big part of your day would go. That get up, check the forums, check it out throughout the day. It's almost like being on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, except it's harder because those forums are pretty crappy, right?
Yes. Yes,
they Software are. Sucks.
Facebook groups are not good for this.
What do you mean? I feel like Facebook groups are a step above beyond, I forget the old software that people were using for...
Yeah. Well, with the software, you can very easily see what the threads are. With Facebook, that stuff kind of disappears into ether. It's not necessarily showing you in perfect chronological order. So you're having to search a lot. Use the search functions in there to search for, I don't know, keywords or something like that.
Got it. Okay. And so you would go in there, you'd help people out, you'd get new customers, and that produced for you. You went to Facebook groups, you dealt with the BS of dealing with Facebook groups, and that helped you. And that was like what, morning you'd get up and you'd start checking this? Throughout the day you check it?
All day long.
All day long.
Yeah. Yeah.
Were you dating at the time?
Probably, yes.
And so in the middle of a conversation, would you be the type of person who on a date would just pull out their phone and start doing this?
No, I had a girlfriend at the time, so, you know, around all the time.
I feel like with a girlfriend, it's easier to do that because now we're together. You know how I work.
Yeah. Yeah. My wife now, yeah, she's totally used to it, thankfully.
You still do it? At dinner, you'll pull out your phone?
No, not like that. We're pretty good about it. But she's used to me being like a workaholic and just like stopping and thinking up into the air and playing with my beard, which I actually do when I think, and go off into the ether and then come back, write something down and keep going.
You do SEO. How effective was search engine optimization?
It was very effective for that company, insanely. So I talk about this specific thing as an example a lot for how people should do SEO. So our very first keyword that we ranked number one for was, is either like Amazon Rank Tracker or Amazon Keyword Rank Tracker. Like, I did the data before and it was something like 100 searches a month, nothing. But we were the only solution. So out of those 100 searches a month, I mean, we're converting like half of them or something like that. So, you know, you run the math on a SaaS product on recurring revenue, 100 searches a month can make a bunch of money if you do it right.
What did you do to rank for that? You're still ranking, by the way, for Amazon Rank Tracker.
That's amazing because that site hasn't had anything done to it in a long time.
It's a blog post that was written March 16th, 2015.
Well, that's not what used to rank. The homepage used to rank, I think.
It was a homepage. And so what did you do to rank for that word back then since you're an SEO person?
Well, optimize it. And I knew where to get good backlinks and whatnot.
Okay. What type of places? I see a smile as you're talking about that. What would you do to get good backlinks?
So we didn't do anything super sketchy with this one because trying to be a legit company, we don't want to use like PBNs and stuff like that. That's back when PBNs were more mainstream.
What's a PBN?
A private blog network. It's a site with some authority that you put up and host specifically for backlink purposes. Okay. Totally against Google's terms of service. Don't recommend it, especially if you don't know what you're doing. And I don't use them anymore myself anyway.
Okay. And so you didn't do that. What did you do?
Just, you know, if you know a Forbes editor here or there, you get some links. I reach out to a couple people, just kind of spread the links around.
Andrew from E-commerce Fuel seems to have been a friend too.
Mm-hmm.
Did he help get customers?
Maybe. So he is a very respected person in the e-commerce world.
Mm-hmm.
And we gave him a free account, said, check it out. He liked it. And I asked for a testimonial and he said, yes. I kind of feel bad because I think his face might still be on the website. You know, I haven't been to the website in a long time. And he, you know, he was nice and let me put it up there, but like the new owners still probably use it. And I'm sure he hasn't used our product in a really long time.
I'm going to scroll through and see if I don't see him on the site. Doesn't mean that he's not there, but I don't see him promoted the way that you did when you were running the site. So then what else worked for you for getting more customers? Oh no, he is. You're right. He's still prominently on the site. Oh, sorry, yeah. Buddy. You know what? I just scrolled super low to where all the testimonials usually are, but no, he is like up there with the top section of the site. Amazon keyword tracking is a beautifully simple and clean interface. Got it. Is that what you guys
referred to? That's all it was at the time.
Did you guys refer to it as Amazon keyword? Oh, no, wait. Amazon keyword tracking. Got it. Never mind. Amazon keyword tracking in a beautifully simple and clean interface. That's the quote that he gave you, and you guys used that. Got it. What else did you do to grow beyond that? Add features?
Yes. So didn't have to do like certain growth hacking and stuff going on. It's more, we just solved a big domain. So the next big feature that really changed the game was that we kind of broke down how the Amazon search algorithm worked. And so let's take like Google SEO. You know, you just optimize your site for keywords and then you get backlinks, like good backlinks that are trustful. And Google rewards that. It's like social votes. And so your website goes up. In Amazon, it's similar. You optimize your listing for the same keywords, but then there's no such thing as backlinks for that. The equivalent are sales. So if somebody searches your keyword on Amazon, finds your product, clicks it, and then presses purchase, Amazon registers that as, you know, a signal for ranking. We figured out how to kind of work around that. We created a two-sided marketplace where sellers could give away their products for super cheap, say $1 when it might usually cost $20. And so you had all these people who were like, oh, I get this stuff for super cheap. All I have to do is purchase and leave a review with a nice disclaimer. I received this, you know, in exchange for a review. And it worked. You know, people could give away several hundred units a day, give a week or two, they're ranking at the top of Amazon. Everybody's happy except for the customers long-term from Amazon.
Because the customers get what?
The people who got the products were good. And at first it was no big deal. But then over time, more and more people started doing this. And so many of the reviews on Amazon were incentivized, more or less. You know, they're disclosing it, but it doesn't change the fact that they were still there.
Because the algorithm's not reading the disclosure. The algorithm's just seeing somebody hit a keyword, bought,
yeah,
and then reviewed it.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you kept this going. Let's talk about the features. Were there features that added more?
We had all kinds of features, like different on-page optimization stuff for your keywords. We had some like keyword research stuff, but really like the rank tracking and the giveaway service. Like those were the main things for sure.
You did that as a service?
Well, so I think we made like an order of magnitude better than other companies. Like there were a couple companies doing it. Like the biggest was Snagshout at the time. And you would pay them per review. I don't remember how much it was. We'll just say like $10, $20 type of thing. So $20 for everything that you gave away. We came in and we said, oh, if you're a subscriber, you can do unlimited for, you know, $50 a month or something like that. And so it was just such a no-brainer. So it was an order of magnitude easier to do it, to give them away without having to scan, manually do each one. And it was way cheaper. And, you know, if you do anything like that, order of magnitude better and cheaper, it's easy sell.
How did you end up finding your buyer?
They cold emailed us. They were a Chinese fund that had been put together, and they had a thesis about Amazon was going to take over the world. They were right about that part. and they wanted to own as much of the ecosystem as possible. So we were their first and biggest acquisition in the space for that. Like they were huge Amazon sellers themselves.
Okay. And so they said, this is going to work out well. What type of people were they?
Very, well, I know this now. This is all in retrospect, very inexperienced people. The main guy behind it, now I think he was a pretty nice guy, but he's really good at raising money and like telling the story, but the company wasn't really the best at knowing how to operate these things. And so I think they kind of got in over their head with it.
Were you at Bangkok at the time when you launched this? You were, because you decided it's what? Why Bangkok?
Oh, when we sold, we were in Bangkok. At first, we were in Ho Chi Minh City. You know, I was living abroad. When we started hiring, I just said, oh, I think we hired like 8 or 10 people at one time because it was a crazy growth. And I was like, oh, you guys got to come and like stay with me in Ho Chi Minh City for 3 months. And it worked out well. And then afterwards, everybody just kind of wanted to stay. And so we, as a team, moved to Bangkok for several months and then just kept staying there.
Okay. And so they cold called you. They wanted to buy. I'm seeing a blog post here by Brian Rowe. He was one of the first employees.
Yeah.
Do you guys have an issue with him? Is this like a...
No, he was... No, we're good now. He was pretty angry when we sold.
Actually. Yeah. Why? Yeah. He said you stood up one day and you made this announcement and he was dumbfounded after he moved out to be with you.
Yeah. So once we sold, some of the people, you know, we'd like taken a chunk of the cash that we were selling for and earmarked it for the employees who were staying to like receive a bonus. And it was, you know, typical exit stuff. Like they were going to receive it in a year or 6 months or something like that. So to make sure that they stayed around. And then after that, like once I no longer had any control, the new owners pushed it a little bit. Like they were like, you know, we're a remote team with, you know, most people based in Bangkok, and they said stuff like, oh, you have to move to China. Right. That's a very different place to move for a lot of people. And then I think we had an amazing culture, like work culture at first. It was really fun, very free, very trusting. And the culture just kind of changed once it sold a little bit. It's just different owners. You know, I'm so far away from anything corporate, never had a real job. I didn't even know how that worked. And so it just changed a lot. And then, so some people felt, mainly one person, him, felt kind of slighted by it.
The culture changed.
Yeah, culture changed. And it didn't end up great for them. You know, just trying to make the move to a new country, like that's a big deal. Like once you've already established something else, I think most people still got their bonuses unless they like left earlier, type of thing. But it was a really stressful thing. And I'm sad at how that worked out because they were like family. So it sucked.
And this was what, was the guy's name Jerry who made the acquisition? It was.
Yeah.
And what was Jerry's background?
He was a big seller on Amazon. One of the somewhat typical Chinese methods, which is sell lots of stuff at like very, very low margin.
Okay.
I don't know why, but that's
it was from where? He was getting it from China and then keeping it housed in the US?
Yeah, so he was Chinese, lived in China, manufacturing it there because they can get stuff made for way cheaper than you know Westerners trying to do the same thing. They know how the system works. Okay. Getting it made, selling it on FBA for very low margins, but they were going for huge revenue numbers. He was playing a much bigger game, trying to become a billionaire type of thing.
Okay,
yeah. And so his background, I don't know. I think he's like. Definitely studied English. His English was impeccable. Lived in Germany for a while.
Apparently, he loved Shakespeare and knew how to talk all the U.S. and Western, stuff.
Yeah, yeah. No, he was good at that. He was very good at telling stories of like big stuff of what could happen. SF VCs would probably love his stuff.
Okay.
At first, yeah.
What's he doing now? I should interview him.
I have no idea.
Wow. He still owns a company?
I think so, as far as I know. Yeah.
So he bought 20% of the business and then came back afterwards and got 80%, the last 80%. And it was there a deal?
Was that it? No, I don't think. What was it? I think it was they bought 80% of it at first and then bought the last 20%. And here's the crazy thing. Mm-hmm. It was less than a year apart. And when they bought 80%, they paid whatever amount it was. And the final amount ended up, the last 20%, they bought it for like just as much or more what they paid for the 80%.
Wow. Yeah.
Because the growth rate was that much. It was insane growth.
What was
insane
revenue at the end?
I don't know when I left. I think the biggest that I saw it, I don't know if I still own part of it or not then, was like $860,000 a month.
A month.
A month.
And we're looking at about $650 in profit a month.
Something like that.
Why did you sell?
So again, clearly, if I owned it completely at that point, my goodness, I would have sold for way more if I had sold it all. But we were playing within Amazon's terms of service, but we were like pushing it, we knew. And even if we weren't pushing it, we knew a change was going to have to happen. There were so many reviews going on to Amazon. Mm. And again, within terms of service, but it had to change. And so we were afraid that our platform would get shut down or something like that. So there was fear. We knew there was a lot of upside because of the crazy growth rate, but we knew the fear. And so we decided to take the chips off the table while we had a life-changing offer in front of us.
And when you say we, this was you and then
my co-founder.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was your co-founder's background? I saw that also online. I just can't see it here in front of me. What was his background?
I'm glad to tell you. He's an amazing guy. So he was an optometrist.
Yeah, that's what it was. I saw that on Brian's site. An optometrist who was coding on the side.
Yeah, so he just coded for fun. He's a really intriguing guy. He literally is probably the best person I've ever met. He's like the best human possible. He became an optometrist instead of a coder because like he didn't quite understand the careers of coding. You know, mm-hmm. He didn't know that was out there. I mean, he's from Australia, so like the community was way, way smaller.
Apparently an Australian Vietnamese guy? Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So Vietnamese heritage, but he's Australian completely.
Got it. Yeah. And then what percentage of the company did he own?
Half. 50-50.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I know our producer asked you what was the toughest time for you, and it was the hacking. I feel like you've talked about that so much, but since it is something that's so painful, why don't we talk about that, and then we'll get into what you're doing with Smash. You know what? Let me take a moment to talk about my second sponsor. It's TopTal for hiring developers. Do you have any advice for anyone who's listening about how to hire a developer or what to look for?
None.
None. Really? You don't hire developers at all? Find an optometrist who's...
I work with him. And now like all the software projects I work on, I work with him.
Always with him. You guys still and co-founders?
He finds them. Yes. We're still co-founders on other things.
Okay. But not in Smash VC.
No, we do deals together in Smash.
Okay. Got it. Oh, because the way you work at Smash is you bring in $100,000 or so. And then if the company needs more money, you bring in other people.
It's part financial, but part talent-wise. So, you know, we've worked with some software companies and we actually bought them completely, but, you know, I don't want to do that myself. So I would come to like, say on, you want to go in on this? And so, yeah, he does. So it's just whoever's going to add the most value for the founders, for my investment, for everything kind of combined. And we have a list of, I don't know, probably 50 or so people who are interested in co-investing on individuals, but very rarely do we tap people.
All right. If you're out there and you're listening to me, you could see the power of a great developer, right? All the people who are trying to get cheap developer or developer who they could brag about for getting from a different country at a low price. This is not for you. But if you're looking for somebody who can really have this kind of impact on your business, that's when you call in TopTal. And if you go to toptal.com/Mixergy, you can /Mixergy, you can schedule a call with one of their matchers and just bring up your biggest issue, bring up your vision for where you want the company to go, what you're looking for from a developer, and challenge them. They could find someone part-time, someone to work on a project for you. I remember it was David Hauser who works at Handbrake. He sold Grasshopper and then he started making personal investments. I said, do you use them? He goes, yeah, I recommend them to my portfolio companies. I said, why? He said, sometimes they have this project that they want to do. They want to get it right, but they don't want to get their team distracted by it. I say, go find TopTal, and TopTal's developers will build it. If you love it, they can get it integrated into the rest of your company and your people can take over, or those developers can take over and run that themselves. And if you hate it, you haven't been distracted. Just close it up and move on. All right, whether it's for part-time, project basis, full-time, even whole teams, go to TopTal.com tal.com/mixergy. When you use that URL, you'll get 80 hours of developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours, in addition to a no-risk trial period. That's an exclusive deal just for us. But go there because they've got great matchers who will introduce you to developers who will change your business. That's top is in top of your head, tal is in talent, toptal.com/mixergy. Want to talk a little bit about the...
Did you say 80 that? Free hours?
Yeah,
did you pay for 80? That's a really good deal.
Yeah, on this level. To be honest with you, that part, people keep coming back to me and say, why do you blow past that? Why do you blow past the no-risk trial period? I don't want the type of person who's just going to sign up for that. I want the person who says, I know what a great developer can do for my business. So
that is right? True. Yeah. So I've, Ann and I have worked with developers who haven't been as good. And then I get to see what he does on his own. And like the 10X developer thing that, you know, everybody pokes fun of, a lot of it's really true. Like it's such a big deal.
Yeah.
What he can accomplish in a weekend, you know, is what others can do in like months.
I think people who know it, and everyone else just feels like it's ridiculous. So talk a little bit about the hacking situation. What happened?
All right. So let's see. trying to think. So again, as I've mentioned, like my co-founder was really good developer, but we were working at scale that we never had before. You know, many, many thousands of customers, hundreds of thousands of people on the other side of our platform, the marketplace side of the platform. And so we were trying to just keep up. And you want to hear something else crazy?
Yeah.
During the entire business, he was the only developer.
Really?
Yeah. It wasn't until we started selling that we started bringing on other people.
Wait. What about this whole, didn't you have a unicorn, Smash Unicorn or something project that you built in addition to it? He did that by himself?
Yep.
Holy crap. Okay, yeah. There it is. Unicorn Smasher. You guys created that during the sale process. That was just him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right. Sorry. So you're starting to say it's him and get leading me to the hack?
Okay. So yeah, but because you know he was at max capacity, just like I was, but I couldn't help on this. A couple of things had like security issues had been kind of left open. And hackers being hackers, they decided to like poke around our site and our databases and stuff like that. And they ended up getting a list of everybody's email and password. But, you know, the passwords were encrypted. So we did the responsible thing and told everybody like, hey, your passwords have been, you know, your account details have been hacked, but your passwords are safe. Put this out on Reddit, which was the place where most of the marketplace was at. It was a big angry Reddit thread. And turns out I was wrong. They weren't properly encrypted. And so people's passwords became open and vulnerable if you just ran them through like a common, I'll call it decryptor for lack of a better word. I forget what it's called. And so that was a huge, massive hack with lots and lots of angry people. And we were, and this was also during the process of, we were already working at the deals for the sale. And so I'm thinking, this is over. This is completely over. We're going to get sued for bazillion for all of our money. The sale's not going to go through. It's all going to go to zero. Ah.
And so while this is happening, you have to figure out how to calm things down. I'm looking for all the complaints on Reddit. For some reason, I can't come up with it, but people were vocal about it. What?
Good.
And I'm pretty good at researching this stuff. So I'm sure that it's out there. What did you do to clear things up and go through with the sale?
The people buying it didn't even seem to notice, I don't believe. Okay. I don't know how. And it's... You know, as far as like the masses of people on Reddit, you know, just kind of owned up to it, said exactly what was happening. Was being very honest. They all thought I was lying because they thought I had lied about their passwords being safe when right. They weren't. But I actually didn't know when I said it. So just kind of owned up to it, cleaned it up best we could. Luckily, our sellers were safe, as far as I know.
What do you mean? What do you mean by the sellers were safe?
So we had two different sites, like the marketplace where a few hundred thousand people who would just buy the stuff for a dollar, you know, mm-hmm. And then we had our core group, a few thousand sellers and all their data and information in the app. That was very valuable.
Got it.
And as far as I know, that was kept safe. So.
Okay. But did you start writing like productivity hacks? Is that one way that you dealt with the SEO of AMZ Tracker hack searches.
Did I?
Well, you know what? Maybe this is after you. Because if I do searches for AMZ tracker, AMZ tracker hack, if I do searches like that, I end up coming up with a lot of productivity hack blog posts.
Oh, nah. Actually, I don't think I did reputation management for that.
All right, let's talk then about now what you're doing. You've decided you're going to invest in companies. At first, you did it in a more traditional way. In fact, you went to these different, what was it that, how did you invest in my friend Justin's company, Needles?
Oh, that was just through Seed Invest, which is a crowdfunding platform. You know,
why kind do you of use like that? It's like Kickstarter, but you get equity instead of the product.
So they had that. They also have one that's basically just like an angel list. So they have the version for non-accredited investors, which, you know, will have a few thousand people joining something, and then others, which was just accredited. I assume this was accredited one.
Okay.
But I was just interested in angel investing. Seemed like the cool thing to do. That's what all the people who've had exits, it's like you have to do it next, supposedly. So I got into it. And, you know, I haven't really used that platform in a while, but
it was just you saying, this is what I'm supposed to do. I've got some money. I'm going to get into it somehow. I don't know anyone in investment. I'm just going to go onto these platforms.
Yes. And it's a great way to learn. I also thought I knew a lot of stuff.
Okay.
And I feel like now I know I didn't. And hopefully, you know, 5 years from now, I'll say the same thing about me right now. Oh, I thought I knew stuff, but I didn't.
What were you wrong about with investing?
So I didn't, you know, like Taleb's work, and he talks about the barbell strategy. I'm familiar with that?
Mm-mm.
Taleb talks about his investing strategy, which is 80% safe, or like 90% safe, or whatever. And then 10% is kind of like high risk, high reward type of thing.
Okay.
But you want to avoid like, and he's talking about like a barbell, like you're bench pressing. But you want to avoid the middle ground, which is like, you know, not too high upside, but medium risk, because that's where you kind of people lose out at. I feel like I was doing a lot of that in my angel investing, and even probably even like proudly proclaiming that, like, oh, I'm looking for businesses that probably aren't going to fail type of thing as much. And I look back now and I don't know if that was really the best way to do it. I think with angel investing, it really needs to be like, you have to have a case to be a $1 billion startup. Because I look at some of the startups that I've invested in that have either closed down or ones that I just know aren't going to be huge upsides. And, you know, I write a check because they're already making some revenue and it seems like, oh, it's be hard for them to really fail. But then they putter around for years. And that's a huge option. Wow, I didn't sleep much last night. I don't remember the word I'm looking for. Opportunity cost. Wow. Yeah. So huge opportunity cost. But then also more times than not, they will close. You know, if these founders don't have some massive exit in front of them or something really exciting, they lose focus on it and whatnot. So I think with the traditional angel investing, it needs to be able to be a $1 billion company or at least a multi-$100 million company. And so I was playing that middle ground, which didn't really work.
And so that wasn't working. Were you losing money on it?
No, whether it's luck or skill or whatever, I think my angel portfolio will do pretty well. Now, of course, that was a span over several years of making these angel investments. And so they got better. But I look at the early ones and they were not very good.
I'm looking at your AngelList profile to see the investments that you made. Carthook, is that part of that?
That's a good one.
That's a good one. They're doing really well. That's not you trying to play it safe.
Mm-mm. I could say that one might be slightly similar to what I described, but it still turned out to be a really good investment. Part of it's because the founder, Jordan's amazing.
Yeah. And he's got your mentality where he's more like a bootstrap type of person. He's got to figure out how to make everything work. He's probably, I don't know him super well, but I imagine that he's not sleeping much.
I think he works hard.
You got Parsley, you got LeadFuse. Those are successful companies, right?
Somewhat.
Okay. I won't get too deep into it because I don't know how much you can talk about it. You got Cafe X. That's via AngelList. This was you partially playing, figuring it out. At what point did you say, I think I got my new model? My new model is I'm going to find businesses like mine where the guy needs a little bit of money. The woman wants to take some off the table. The founding team needs a little bit of cash to give them some long-term view. I'm going to put that little cash. And
this was easy because it's easy now. I saw so much of the traditional VC-backed companies that were just bullshit. They all were. Not all of them. Plenty of them are great, but so many of them were. These founders didn't have the skill sets they needed, or it's just playing the next round of funding game type of thing. And it doesn't, I think a lot of it's bullcrap, but also it doesn't resonate with me. Like, I'm a bootstrapper at heart, for sure. Okay. And so one day it just kind of like dawned on me, what am I doing? Like, I'm trying to play this game of looking cool, doing this thing, trying to make some big money, but it's not me. I wish that I had someone offering me to take chips off the table for AMT Tracker. I wish that had happened. Why don't I just offer other founders that type of thing? And so it's just a light bulb moment where it made all the sense in the world to try and offer that.
And we talked before we got started about how you don't have a portfolio listed on your site. Mm-hmm. You don't want to talk about them. And I asked you why, and you said, do you remember?
There's no need inviting extra competition for some of these businesses, especially if a lot of these businesses are smaller at scale. So competitors could pop up. You know, I mentioned people doing listing revenue reports, you know, being very open about their finances and stuff like that. And I think that invites a lot of competitors.
You gave a specific person. Could we say the name of the person who you said?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll send him this link once it's live. Dan Norris, a friend of mine, he founded WP Curve. Mm-hmm. And early on, they were doing, you know, the revenue reports type of thing. And I think that was great at first. It created a lot of traction and people interested in following along with the journey. But then by the end, there were like 30 other copycats. And he's never said this, but I personally think it probably hurt the amount of money they were able to sell the company for, because there were so many competitors taking away market share, which if they kept that more private, people would have never known, and, you know, probably been like 10x less competitors.
Okay. And so when I asked you about this, you said, well, I've got an example of somebody who's on Amazon. If other people find out what they're doing on Amazon that's working for him, they're going to copy him, and suddenly we're going to end up with a lower margin, and I don't want to do that for him. And then the question that I asked you afterwards is, if it's so fragile that somebody could come in and copy them, is it a real business or just a hit product or a hit set of products?
So depends what you classify as a business. A lot of small businesses are just hacks. So you can look at my first supplement business. Was it mm-hmm. a business, or was it just an SEO site that happened to have a buy button? You know?
Okay.
So it's the same type of thing. Like,
but do you really want to invest in something like that that's so short term?
I think so. I think the returns have already been very good and will continue to be. So when you invest in businesses of this size, all right, so let's say you're going to do the traditional like VC path. You're going to raise your pre-seed funding. You're going to raise $500,000, $5 million cap, right? That is insane in the small business world. Absolutely insane. Like, in small business, you don't raise anything. You sell at a multiple of your, you know, your free cash.
Revenue.
Yeah. No, not revenue.
Profit.
Your profit.
Okay.
So in the small business world, you might sell an Amazon business for, say, a little bit less than 3 years profit.
Okay. Right?
Yeah. So that's totally different. So when you start running the math on that type of thing, 33% a year yield, that's pretty good.
And that's what you're putting in. You're putting in $100,000. You might get $33,000 every year for 3 years. And if you sell afterwards, it's a bonus. And if you could just keep that going, oh, and you still want to get your $100,000 back. So you get it out after 3 years, and then...
No, if they sell, I'm very open to whatever the founder wants to do. If they want to sell, cool. They want to hold it and just keep pumping out these dividends, I'm cool with that. I generally try and help them grow it whenever it's appropriate. You know, have a good growth skill set. I have a marketing company that kind of like goes along with stuff. So we try and help grow them.
You do SEO on Amazon for them?
Not on Amazon. It's pretty public how the Amazon search engine works now. It's not all that complicated. I have no special skill set with that. Like, I can look at it and tell you stuff, but other people can too. But with like Google SEO, for example, it's a much harder thing to get right. And so we have a marketing agency for that.
This is, what is it called? Smash...
Digital.
Smash Digital. By the way, whoever does your freaking design is amazing.
Oh, thanks, man.
So who does that?
Mel Richards did the initial stuff. She kind of came up with the concept. And then I have a full-time designer on the team that does it.
The whole thing, it just feels so right. You know what I mean?
Thanks, man. I really appreciate
it. It doesn't
that.
Feel heavily designed. It doesn't feel out of touch. It doesn't feel like a designer designed a company site. It's your personality exemplified at its highest sense, and it goes throughout everything that I touch. It gives you a ton of credibility, a ton of credibility.
I love that. And I'll actually send you the our new sales page that's about to go up that we're changing. It's now full of memes and like more real and raw and stuff like that, like more close to our roots.
It's just really well done. So, but the other problem with that model where you take, if the owner takes a dividend, you take a dividend too. What about taxes on that? Taxes off profits that you take every year.
Oh, it's just like it's an LLC. So it's just pass through stuff.
But doesn't that also suck that you're now paying maybe 50% of the money that you're taking in? So already you've put up $100,000. Maybe next year you end up with $33,000, as we said earlier, comes back to you from profit. Half of that goes to taxes. So now you're at 15,000.
You're in California. I'm not, sir.
I know it does suck.
So what's the LLC tax right now? Like 25 or something like that?
25% is all you have to pay.
I don't know exactly.
My that's federal is even higher. Basically, taxes aren't an issue for you.
I mean, it doesn't change the basic math formula. Like, look, where else are you going to put your money? You know, before 2 weeks ago, you could just say, well, you put in the stock market, it would make more. You know, as of right now, as the coronavirus stuff's happening, not as easy to say. But where else can you get comfortable returns that are like cash flow generating specifically? Like the angel VC stuff, you're not seeing any money for 7 to 10 years. Bonds are laughable. Like there's just no easy money anywhere. Like this is a good source of cash flow. And I like cash flow first and then focusing on exits. Yeah, let's make sure we're making money day and day and then we'll focus on the big win.
Is there a company you can point to and say this is an example of what I'm doing and be open about them?
Probably. Yeah, so here is an example. AMZ Pathfinder. They are an Amazon PPC management service.
Okay.
And a guy who actually invested in the first time, his name's Nate Ginsberg. We did this exact same thing several years ago before Smash VC even existed. It was just like a private deal. I invested in him and we ended up selling. And then Nate became like an investor doing the same type of thing. He brought AMZ Pathfinder to us. And so, you know, the business was doing a little bit. It's doing okay. But again, with a lot of these businesses, these founders are making okay money, just like me with my first supplement company, making $3,000 a month. My bank account was never bigger than $10,000. You know, same type of thing. So we give them a bunch of cash. He gets to sleep better at night. And then we help grow it. And we have helped grow the company, you know, quite a bit, actually.
Because you do SEO.
We're just starting with this site. So there's no SEO on this one yet.
What did you do to help grow the company?
So this one was more organizational. So Nate gets most of the credit for this one. He's very good at processing out like what a company needs and like hiring specialty people for that type of stuff. And so he helped free the founder to be able to focus on improving the business instead of working in the business. So that was a big one.
Got it. So if, for example, I were to say, look, I'm not looking for, Mixergy is not a venture backable company, but I'd like to take some money off the table and have somebody else who cares as much about the business as I do and maybe gives more of a rat's ass about SEO than I do. Mm-hmm. I would come to you, I'd say, here are my profits. You'd give me a multiple of profits, but you take a small percentage of the business. Mm-hmm. And then you do free work on the site?
So each deal is kind of, you know, changes. Most of the time, we will, like the SEO company will do all the work at cost, like at our actual cost for like content and whatnot. But all the work done by the staff is free. So I just like my SEO company, we have a bunch of clients and probably like half of our work goes to that. And the other half goes to, you know, my own portfolio businesses. And so the clients are paying for the staff to keep them up. And so that the portfolio company.
So it's not a profitable business for you.
It is a profitable business for me.
So it's a profitable business and it gives you enough staff to help your SEO company.
This SEO company has allowed me to do half of the awesome business things I've done because I've always had stable-ish income coming in, enough for me to live off of comfortably.
All right. I think I got it. And the size companies that you're looking for?
Protect the downside, keep the upside open.
And you live off of that, off of the salary from the SEO company? Mm-hmm. Not from your savings?
No, from salary off of that. And then like for all my savings and stuff, like I'm pretty much just investing. Like I'm not flashy or anything. I'm not driving a Lambo. I'm just, you know, reinvesting.
What's your more stable stuff? What's the other side of the barbell?
Gold. I like that one.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Like I'm not one of these crazy gold people, but I think
physical, you know, gold. How do you buy your gold?
I mean, there's ETFs that have a lot of it. And, you know, there's some physical stuff, like not at my house, it's stored somewhere. Mm-hmm. But this is just like the oh shit stuff. Hey, everything comes crashing down. I got enough to restart.
It's what else? Okay. Gold. What else do you do for the other side of the barrel?
Let me see. So a lot, actually think,
but that sucks now too.
I don't have a lot of that. So I've kind of been, if you know the name Chris Irons, his Twitter handle is like Quoth the Raven. He's a little bit nutty, but he has a really good presentation on why to buy gold. And I don't want to become like a gold nut. I'm not pushing that. But in the presentation, he talks about this whole system is kind of crazy about, you know, our economy is built on spending instead of saving, on printing money with no downsides, that type of thing. And I think it just doesn't make sense. Like eventually the reckoning will have to happen. And right. So I haven't been super bullish on a lot of stocks in a long time, especially these high valuations. And up until 2 weeks ago, I looked stupid. And now I look okay. But I think owning small businesses is actually a really relatively safe thing to do, especially if it's a diversified portfolio. You know, these things are generating cash. There's not dramatic risk in any of them. And because it's a portfolio, you know, if something happens to one of them, it's not the end of the world.
It's looking more, I couldn't help but just go into my trading account right now as you were saying how bad it was. Oh man, it is very painful.
Yeah.
Wow. Do you have a different last name? You don't have to say what it is, but in my research, I came across someone who has a first name, fits your profile, different last name.
Yes. I go by a pen name online. And it's publicly known that I go by a pen name.
Travis Actually, Jameson is not your real last name.
No. Tropical MBA did a whole podcast and where I had a few minutes talking about it. Of like all of us, several people go by pen name just for like privacy reasons online. Like Dan from Tropical MBA, Andrews is not his real last name. And he talks openly about that.
But is his last name known publicly?
No.
Okay. Is yours known publicly?
No. I mean, some people do, obviously.
Mine is, but I legally changed mine. I didn't. Yes.
I didn't know this.
I did. I wasn't born Warner.
Man. So did you do this? Like, it was like a persona type thing?
No, I was trying to make sales calls and people wouldn't take me seriously if I called with my real name. But it was clearly. And I got this sense that there were, even my first name was different. People weren't taking me seriously. I tried a bunch of different names. Suddenly, as soon as I went more American and a little familiar sounding, people really took me seriously. And I said, all right, great. Then I'll just go by that. And then I started meeting people in person who I'd done work with online. And it felt weird for me to say, look, we're meeting in person because we need to strengthen this deal. And by the way, this name is fake. It became a distraction. So I changed it and felt good.
I've thought about that. That's totally fascinating. But the only thing is like, you know, I love my dad. That's his family's name.
I thought my father would have a problem with it. My dad didn't, he didn't bat an eye about any of it. It was shocking.
Now that you mentioned, my dad wouldn't either.
I'm surprised. Yeah. But I think now the way that it works for you, where it's, you're known by it online, but offline, you've got something else. It makes sense. I think that you don't have to change your name legally anymore the way that I did.
So kind of, but everyone who knows me, who I didn't grow up with, knows me as Travis Jameson. And so I meet people like it depends on the setting. If I'm in a business setting, I just say Travis Jameson because no one will know who this other guy is.
I have a similar situation. There are a couple of times that I have an issue with it. If people are inviting me to speak somewhere, they want to buy me the flight, surprise me with a nice flight and hotel room. And my assistant has to make sure that before they do anything like that, that they've got my actual name that's on my passport. Otherwise, you're screwed. You can't get a refund or switch that type of thing out. And then the other time that it comes up is if I'm calling to deal with something and I accidentally say the wrong last name, it feels a little suspicious. Well, don't you know your last name?
Yeah.
Dude, here's how it works. It's not such a big deal.
Yeah. So I at least have that podcast episode now to just point people to. It's like, this explains it. Like, oh, okay. Well.
All right. Okay. I think we've covered a lot over here. I appreciate you coming on here. I'm curious about which companies you've invested in, but I understand why you can't get deeper into it. Well, let me close with this. What do you think about Amazon as a platform in general? I tend to not interview people whose whole business is done on Amazon because I see that they're not making much money. They have big top line numbers, which amazes everybody, but very little profit, a lot of deep anxiety. They can't go to sleep well. Is this a
business? 100% right, which is why in general, I don't invest in Amazon companies anymore. And I won't start another Amazon company. Everything's changed because you have really talented people and big funds and number crunchers coming in here, adding pressure. At the same time, you have all these Chinese manufacturers who used to just be the middleman manufacturer. They're now going direct. So they're undercutting the margins. Margins are getting lower. E-commerce, it's a tough game. You know, it's so capital intensive. Mm-hmm. I buy my products and I don't sell it for another 6 months.
Yeah.
And if you sell it at all, it's a lot of risk. It's just not a game I like. I think FBA is a sinking ship for easy money entrepreneurs type of thing.
And now Amazon doesn't care so much about those sellers. And so the example that I've heard that I think indicates how much they don't care about them is people who buy costumes just before Halloween and then happen to return them because it's not a good fit afterwards. Mm. And Amazon's not standing by their seller. They go, well, just give them a refund or else we boot you out of here. And you better give it to them nicely or else you're going to get a lower rating.
You want to hear a horror story?
Yes, I do.
It's a very recent one. So I still own an e-commerce company that's selling supplements. We have a lot of products. And we were using, say we have like 50 products or something like that. We were using a manufacturer for one of our 50 products. And we had stopped using them probably like a year and a half ago because they just weren't playing game with their like certifications that we were requiring for like, you know, safety reasons and stuff like that. So we stopped. Then a few weeks ago, we hear that all the products that they've ever made had been recalled by the FDA. They just pissed off the FDA so much and they were getting worse instead of better. So the FDA said, you're done, recall everything. And so we're like, oh, well, that sucks. But the FDA did say there's nothing dangerous that we found. That's the key point. So we recalled all of the products from this one product that we had made.
Okay.
Turns out they had made products for like 2,000 different brands, and they handed over their entire email list, even people who had just gotten quotes to the FDA and to Amazon. So Amazon came through and took down all of our listings, not just the one. Oh, and it gets way worse. Then they decided to email every customer we've ever had and said, your product's been recalled due to safety issues.
Wow. Yes. All of the products, even the ones that weren't recalled.
All the products.
Wow.
Yes. Yes. And we had to lawyer up and it was a nightmare even getting the products reinstated because they took down all of our listings, which, you know, hurts the rankings in Amazon, hurts the sales. Now we have tons of negative reviews of people saying this product was recalled. And we're like, it was not recalled. Like, we, you know, we tell them the best we can, but it's hard to do it. So it's been a month now of dealing with Amazon's lawyers. Hopefully they will fix it. And we just want them like to email the customers and say, oops, we were wrong. My bad. Yeah. And like take down the negative reviews and we'll just like all the revenue we lost, like we'll just eat it. Like, fine. Was that just another example of just like, you don't want to, a lot of people make a lot of money on Amazon, but it's not a game I want to play anymore.
It's a tough platform. I'll hold on to my Amazon stock because they clearly have an advantage that's unfair at this point. But just I'm so weary of talking to interviewing entrepreneurs who are on the platform because I know what the hell they're going through. We can talk in 5 years when they can look back and say, give me more of the types of stories you just talked about.
Yeah, which is crazy. Like even 3 or 4 years ago, I would say it was the easiest way to become a millionaire. It was like selling on Amazon. It's just completely different now.
All right. The website is smash.bc. Do you want people to actually apply if they're interested in
absolutely. Getting,
do you look at that? You don't want an introduction through a friend? You don't want someone, like, would you really want someone to go and hit the apply and contact button instead of saying, hey, Andrew, here's what I'm working on. Do you think it would make more sense for Travis?
A lot of people wouldn't know you, for example. I think back to me and my first business. I didn't really know any other entrepreneurs. It was just me.
And you would just fill out a button. You would have pressed the button and filled out the application.
I don't know if I would have at the time, maybe. But I don't know. I don't think you need to know someone higher up that knows me in order to like get that in there. And granted, I get a lot of trash, but you know, that's how you make investments. So like you have to look at a few hundred before you pick one.
Oh, look at you. I'm looking at every detail of your freaking site. I love the design. I see that you're even using WooForms, WooFoo forms on your site.
It's only them. Because I've had those accounts for so long that I can't delete them. It's a beautiful product.
That's exactly it. You can't freaking delete it. Yes. It took me, do you know how much money I had to invest in somebody in the team going and finding all the forms, making sure we download all the data from it, making sure we reproduce the forms so that we can switch over to a form system that works. This is the beauty of software. You do not get that with freaking supplements. Here, yes. Your business breaks if you cancel WooFoo. The founders have moved on a long time ago.
Hasn't been updated in 5 years.
Yeah.
I can't cancel it.
No, it would take so much time and money that it's just not worth it.
Yep.
All right. I'd really like getting to know you. Were you a little bit uncomfortable with the way that I introduced myself at the beginning before we started recording? I feel like I don't make my guests comfortable in the beginning.
I don't feel like I was uncomfortable. I'd had a couple warnings that like he's very direct. Be prepared for that. You were fine. I enjoyed it.
Came across well, right? And I'm not looking like confront you and go, look, I found this information about you. But I was looking to do my research and check in with people and say, do you really know this guy, Travis?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you did.
I'm glad that I did too. Thanks so much for being on here. It's smash.vc. And even if you don't want to raise money from them, there's a button there that you can press if you want to just get some of their marketing help from his agency. I want to thank the two sponsors who made this interview happen, who stand by me year after year, even though they don't know exactly where it's going to go or what I'm going to say when I do ads for them. There's hostgator.com/mixergy and toptal.com/mixergy. Thanks.